Hey, hey, Broadway best friends. It's your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, back with the Broadway cast. In my opinion, the single greatest theater podcast to ever exist. We talk a lot about Broadway and off-Broadway on our show. And yes, New York City is the epicenter of professional theater on this planet we call Earth. But for a vast majority of us theater fans, myself included, our first foray into the magic of Broadway shows happens a little bit closer to home. I will never forget packing up our family's passenger van and driving to Denver, Colorado, specifically to see the national tour of Les Miserables. I wasn't about to wait for that to get to Salt Lake City. I wanted what I wanted, and I wanted it now. That night, maybe one of the best nights of my life, I put on a full suit, slicked my hair, and stepped out with Mommy in style. It was more than I could have ever dreamt, and I dreamed a dream about it a lot. My dad thought it was nice, but I guess that is for me and my therapist. I even got the OG white Cosette sweatshirt, rarely seen, collector's item. If anybody's seen it, please let me know. I'm sure so many of you have subscriptions to your local theater leagues and get in those theater seats as often as you can. And the great news is the touring productions are full of all the talent and all the magic that Broadway has to offer. I've been lucky enough in my career to tour a few times with shows like Footloose and State Fair, and it's an exciting adventure out on the road. New cities, new faces, new theaters, new wardrobe and tech staff, whole new orchestra. Think about it. So today I wanted to check in with some friends of mine who are currently out there living the glamorous life on the road. Courtney Reed, the original Broadway Jasmine in Aladdin and is currently starring as Satine in the national tour of Moulin Rouge. Taria Campbell, who is no stranger to touring nor Broadway, having played Nala in The Lion King, Aida in Aida, and Dolores Van Cartier in Sister Act. These days, audiences across the country are way more than satisfied with her performance as Angelica Schuyler in Hamilton, and also the king himself, OG Rent star, and one of the workingest Broadway stars of our generation, Adam Pascal. Yes, the Adam Pascal. One song glory, Adam Pascal. Adam is leading up the national tour of Pretty Woman after taking on the role in New York for a hot minute. These three get real with us about what life is like on the road, how it differs from life upon the wicked Broadway stage, and their favorite places to perform, favorite moments to perform. I think you're going to learn a lot that you never thought about. Now, before we get on with the show, I want to remind you to subscribe to the show, rate and review us, follow us on social media at The Broadway Cast, follow me at Ben Does Broadway. If you would like to support us further, you can do so as a member of our Patreon family. All you got to do is click the link in the liner notes, become a part of the Patreon family to receive behind the scenes extra content that's created just for you. We would love it if you become part of our Patreon family. All right, pack your bags. We're going on the road with three Broadway superstars. Let's go on with the show.
And this one is just too much fun for words. I feel like this is old timers day at the podcast, but very young, attractive, beautiful. Meaning that I've known all of you for just a hot minute, which seems completely crazy because we're so dewy and fresh. Let's say hello to our fabulous panel from all over the country today. She's currently starring as Satine in Moulin Rouge, the musical. Of course, audiences know and love her. Originating Jasmine in Aladdin on Broadway, Courtney Reed is here. Hi, Courtney. Ah, the crowd goes wild. People in their cars are nodding. I know that, yes. First question first, where in the world are you right now, Courtney?
I'm in San Francisco.
Heavenly. Yeah. That's one of the stops that you look forward to making on the tour.
Oh, for sure. That's for sure. Loving it.
That is so fun. Also with us, from currently starring in Hamilton on the road. She's also starred in Sister Act on the road and The Lion King on Broadway and everything you've ever seen in your entire life. Taria Campbell is here.
Hi.
Hi, Taria. And
hi, Bandy.
Where does Hamilton find you right now?
I'm in our nation's capital, Detroit. No, I'm just kidding. I'm in Washington, D.C.
Oh my God. We're going to talk about Detroit later on because there are some very specific things about touring through Detroit that I think need to be addressed. I want to point out though, and I don't know if you'll remember this, Taria, but I remember that you and I were in a car driving out to Fire Island the gay island to sing for the, for, well, the gays. And the gays were in the process of auditioning for Hamilton, and we were going over your sides and music in the car, and I,
and you said that I had to sing my audition piece at the bar, and I was not planning on it, and you made me do it.
And did the homos love it? The homos loved it.
They loved it.
And it seems like it seems all in all that this worked out pretty well, I think.
Yes. Great. The homos loved it, and the straights that cast it.
Well, I want to, just for reference, these are the only straights that cast anything. All right. also with us, the living legend, the icon. I'm a big fan. Happy to call him friend. We know him as Roger in Rent. He's also been in Memphis on Broadway. He's currently starring in Pretty Woman out on the road. Ah, Adam Pascal.
Hi,
is here.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Adam Pascal.
Hi, nice to see you, ladies. Thank you for doing this, all of us together. It's lovely to see you both, and I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
It's really fun. Adam, where are you in the world?
I am in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Fayetteville, Arkansas. Ooh. What's the name of the theater in Fayetteville, Arkansas?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because as we were waiting to sign on, I was looking it up to see where I was going this afternoon. It is called the Walton Arts Center.
The Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Yes, the Walton Arts Center. Yeah.
I'd love that you had to look that up, though, because that's that. Nothing really suggests tour life quite like going.
I was going to say, I'm sure both of my fellow travelers will agree that, like, you know, things tend to blur into one another, and honestly, like, you know, you can't remember everything. So I never know the name of the theater generally until it's like, I got to get there for sound check, you know, on Tuesday. And I look it up and go, where is it? How long is it going to take me to get there? And, you know, like, it's sort of like,
And let Uber do the rest. And then you forget which venue is which venue in which city until you come back around.
Yes, that's true too.
Then you get there and you're like, oh, San Diego, it's this place with the hula hoops.
Right.
Yes, right. And the double dutch.
Yes, you've got to do the hula hooping, the double dutching when you're in San Diego. It's just like when you're in Memphis, you have to have. Have you guys played Memphis yet?
We're going in Memphis, a few weeks. We'll be there.
Okay, Adam, get ready. Well, maybe you've played through Memphis before, but at the Orpheum Theater,
I don't remember.
All the friends. Exactly, but you will when you get there. All the friends of the Orpheum, quote unquote, they throw you this incredible potluck dinner, like in between shows.
Oh, I think I do remember that.
All yellow food.
Yeah.
There's not a
yellow and brown.
Yellow and brown foods. It's mac and cheese and potato salad and everything you want before your second show on a Saturday.
I was gonna say nothing I can eat between shows, unfortunately.
Yeah. So you can fart your way through the show. It's very, very sweet.
Wait, I thought it was in Minneapolis.
They do it there too.
They do it there too.
They do it at San Antonio, Texas, too.
They do it in San Antonio.
Oh, my
okay,
God.
Well, shout out to all of these
And
places.
Everything is a casserole in San Antonio.
And when you're...
Like casseroles that I didn't even know that you could have a casserole of.
And when you're from the coast, you forget all about casseroles. And the next thing you know, bam, casseroles in every town.
Casserole is a very transferable food. You know, it's hearty and it fits in a big square thing that you can sort of take anywhere and reheat. It's the perfect type of dish for that thing.
A one pot wonder.
Absolutely. One pot wonder. I've been called that before. All right. Now, before we jump in with all of this, tell me, where have your lives before this very important, crucial moment in your careers, where have your lives intersected before? And I know Adam and Taria, but or is this
a- maybe Adam doesn't.
Yeah, I was the first time meeting.
Yeah, well, I can say that I don't think Courtney and I have actually met in person.
No, we've never met.
We may have crossed paths at a benefit at some point that we both were performing at, but I don't think we actually ever met. And Taria, I know that we've done something. I just can't remember what it is. My apologies.
Would you like me to
please
refer to a funny story?
Please.
Well, I was standing in a stage management office as I newly started a job. And in between cues, this leading man comes in. He says, is the new Aida here? Is she cute? And everyone just kind of turned around and said, she's right there. And that's how we
goodness.
Met. And then we
what a pleasant.
It was towards the end of the run. I was Deborah Cox's standby.
So this must have been, so like I left.
Yes, and then you came back.
And then I came back, right, just for like the last couple of months or something. So we did Aida together. So nice to see you again.
We did.
Yeah,
good to see
you. Time.
Oh my gosh, you guys, not only.
That was almost 20 years ago, right?
You will stop yelling. You will stop telling everyone that we were that old. But yes,
sorry.
It was like 2003.
Yeah,
maybe?
Something like that. Yeah, it was right around there. Yeah.
It had to have been.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think I know who you are, Courtney, but I think that, wait, Courtney, you're Adam's sister, right?
No.
Oh, wait, no. Sorry. His sister did play Jasmine. I'm a little confused.
No, but that would be so weird. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
No, we met. Yeah, we must have met during. Wait, do you know Stephen Cutts?
Yes.
Okay, I think you and I met through Stephen Cutts, but I feel like.
At some Midtown bar.
Yes. Ninth Avenue, Hell's
That's
Kitchen.
That's where it gets
moments.
Really confusing.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
See, it's all a blur.
Yeah, when the meeting at the bar happens.
All coming together.
All right. Well, welcome to each other once more. We like to start off with the game, loosen ourselves up, get the creative juices flowing. And in honor of this being our first ever On the Road touring panel, we're going to play a game called Anybody Have a Map? And this is how we play. Does anybody have a map? Map. That's a little Dear Evan Hansen in the wrong key for you. All right. I am going to speak through, or maybe I'll sing it. We'll see how feisty I feel. A song that is location specific within the United States of America. The first one of you to jump in and tell me what musical that site specific tune is from gets the point. There are extra points if you sing along. Here we go. And don't be polite, please. We hate it when people are polite. Just get in there. Just rip each other limb from limb. Okay, here we go. Gary, Indiana.
Right? Just is from? So it's three times. What do you mean is from? I mean, Gary. And
what show is that
from?
Oh,
it's from The Music Man, of course.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Okay, so we're guessing. That's what we're guessing the show. Okay.
Musical.
Yes. Yes. Well done. And given that we just talked about that, I'm glad it was you that got the point. This one is a freebie, so this is just for speed.
Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yep, that's right. Everybody got that one. It's from
Oklahoma.
I love my pa, ma, I love my pa, but I love dear old Arkansas. Is from going once.
We're so
going
good
twice.
At this.
It's from Big River.
Oh, no.
Okay, great. Moving on.
Ben, only this do ones another... that we were in.
I know. That's right. I know. Actually okay. Know them.
Yeah, we need a little.
I
help.
Would love.
It's the wrong crowd.
Agrabah.
Agrabah
and Nubia are not on your touring schedule.
Fine.
Agrabah.
Okay. Well, then this one is hard too. Then all I know, all I owe, and I know why. And go. It's from. Wonderful. We're all going to learn a little something. It's from State Fair. That's State Fair, the musical, Rodgers and Hammerstein. I did a production when I was 19 and I was a tap dancing cow for a couple nights. That's showbiz for you kids.
What an icon.
All right. All right. We're going to make this easier for you now. Santa Fe.
Newsies.
And
that's
Rent.
Right.
But wait a minute. And
that's right.
Yes.
You can open up a restaurant.
We were first before Newsies. That's, we had that song first. Just saying.
Yep. How about New York? New York, it's a hell of a town. The
42nd Street.
No, but very
Guys
close.
Guys and Dolls.
On close the town?
To the color
no,
purple.
That's right. Adam Pascal got it. On the town.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. I got that. Wow. Okay.
You did. You got that right. How about this one? You got this one. Good morning, Baltimore. That's correct. I want to be in America.
West Side Story.
Good. That's a winner for everybody. Texas has a whorehouse in it.
Texas has a whorehouse in Texas.
Yep. Giving that one away for free. And finally, the old red hills of home.
Oh, that's a Jason Robert Brown something.
You bet it is.
Parade.
Correct. Oh, wow. Ding, ding, ding. There we are. Guess what? You all won a prize package worth over $4 million that you can look for at the stage door at the theater in Detroit when you get there. Congratulations. Let's before we get on the road with y'all, I'm always interested to know, for you guys have all had really expansive, really exciting, really varied careers in the theater. I want to know, when you were sweet little babykins, what was the memory, the moment that you saw something on stage, or maybe it was on film, and you said, that's what I want to do, that kind of launched you into this business we call show, particularly the theater. How about you, Tariq?
Well, I have super contrasting things. I saw Annie, and I had the album of Annie, and it was a rare album that the case of the album opened up, and it was a board game, and you could follow along while the story played, and then you followed along. It looked like Candyland, you know, like what she was doing, and I wanted to be Annie so bad. And then I saw The Color Purple when my mom took me to see it as I was way too young, and I knew I wanted to be an actress. So those two things, I was like a super serious, like always quoting like lines from The Color Purple, like inappropriately at a very young age. And Annie, and always singing The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow at the bottom of the stairs. And if you wanted to get upstairs, you had to pay a quarter.
Well, she knew her worth even then.
Just belting as a young child.
A toll to be prayed. How about you, Courtney?
Oh my gosh,
Reed?
Tariq, I love that. I actually think the moment I knew I wanted to pursue this for the rest of my life was the moment I played Annie and Annie. So that's really crazy. Yay! That you mentioned that. I always tell that story, but I don't know. I didn't really... I was so paranoid about doing this musical theater challenge because I was like, I don't know anything about musical theater. Like, I was a total, I loved Britney Spears and the Spice Girls. And, ooh, you know, I was like obsessed with pop culture, not so much like musical theater. So I don't think, like, I didn't see much theater growing up either. So I would say probably listening to the album of Miss Saigon, I thought like Lea Salonga was like it for me. And also, like, she was the voice of Jasmine, and I was, like, obsessed with that movie growing up. So I think she was, like, my musical, like, my into, like, musical theater, like, wanting to be in musical theater.
When you, playing Jasmine on Broadway, what was the moment that you actually met Lea Salonga? I'm assuming
that happened. She came to see the show. I was so nervous. I probably sucked. I think it was really bad that day. Just because I knew she was in the audience. I was so nervous. And we had seen...
They should never tell you
who's there.
No, they should
literally never tell you. And, you know, we had massive celebrities come in. I wasn't nervous, but then when she came, I was so nervous. But, yeah, it was maybe like a year, maybe like a 6 months in, and she came, and I was just like, oh, my gosh. Oh, Lea, she's such an icon.
Did you have an embrace? I love those moments. I think that's so fun when you get to meet your idols. Those people that you... Even if you just know their names from like cast album liner notes, and then all of a sudden they're in your life. I think that's so great. Cool.
Yeah, when it's like I did for my senior showcase, I sang Easy as Life. And then I went and like, I had a friend who was ushering at AIDA. And so I like snuck in and saw a bit of it. And then when I finally got the job, I wore her costumes, wore Heather's costumes. And I was just like, well, nothing is just going to be ever better than this, you know?
I will tell you, one of the moments for me that where that came true was getting to be in a show with Adam Pascal. I'm such a rent head.
Yes.
But Adam, for sure.
I mean, remember the lottery? That was like the first lottery.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in the front row of Rent. Like, this is the shit.
I was there. I moved to New York in 1996. So I was looking up your nostrils, Adam, sitting in that front row.
Lucky you.
Weeping. Lucky me. But Adam, I know that your trip to theater was not particularly conventional.
No, right. And so, and I wasn't a theater kid. I didn't see a lot of theater growing up, even though I grew up in New York. I loved musical films. You know, I loved Hair. I was obsessed with that movie. And the Rocky Horror Picture Show and Tommy and Grease and like just I just loved musical films, you know. I played in rock bands and all that stuff. And the moment for me actually was getting cast in Rent and actually getting up on a stage and doing it. And the feeling that I got from doing that. It felt so much more comfortable and natural than being a singer in a rock band ever did. And that's what I had done for all of those years. And it wasn't until I started doing theater where that felt so much more comfortable did I realize, oh, there was something off about that. That wasn't the right place for me. And like, this felt like home to me, like just being on a stage in a musical with other people and doing what we do. Like that really felt the most comfortable and natural place for me.
Oh, that's Glenn. Did you ever dream you'd go on to play this kind of variety of roles in the theater? I mean, we're talking everything from Huey Calhoun to Harold Hill.
No, of course not. And certainly at the beginning of my career, I was still very much in sort of the rock band thing, like trying to do that, yeah, as well as, you know, and so I never could envision myself doing things that were like the Music Man. I think I even said that someplace, you know, like in an interview. But you know, look, as my career went on and I started to realize that this really was the place for me, or at least one of the major places that I wanted to spend my life, you know, sort of pursuing, I, and you mentioned before, like, sort of like, do you want to come on and be part of the rock Broadway guys? And I'm like, no, because I don't want it, because like, I am that, and I'm so proud of that and being part of that. But it's like, I need to, and I always needed to do and expand and do other things that weren't that, you know? And so, and that's what makes a career like this so much fun and exciting is to be as diverse as you can be and pushing your own limits and your own envelope and what you think you could do. You know, like everything that I've done in my career, many things, I wasn't sure I could do it, you know, when I did Cabaret, or I did, you know, like Memphis or whatever it was, like I wasn't sure. I was like, I think I can. And that's why I pursued it, because I really felt like I could. And then with each step, and you realize, oh, I can trust my instincts. I'm right about this. When I feel like I can do it, generally I can trust that now, because I've done it and I've been successful enough times to go, okay, I can, you know. But it takes a long time to learn to sort of trust your own instincts like that.
I think that speaks a lot to how much you care for the acting of it all, because it would be very easy, I would imagine, for you to kind of stay in, I'm just going to do these rock and roll guy parts, and that's what I'm going to do. So I think that speaks really highly to your care for the art.
Well, thanks. And by the way, as we all know, nothing's easy. So even if I had wanted to stick to that, it'd still be a struggle and a nightmare at times, as it always is. But yeah, I mean, to me, that was what I wanted to pursue, was the fun of that, of playing make-believe and disappearing and becoming different people and speaking in different accents and wearing costumes. And you know what I mean? Like, that's what's fun. You know what I mean? Doing the same thing over and over again is just like, I would never want to be stuck like that.
Yeah. Well, now we're out on the road checking in. I believe, Tari, you've been on the road before. Adam, you've been on the road before. Have you, Courtney? Is this your first time out on the road?
This is my very first time.
Ooh.
And this is a big fun show to be a part of, to be out there for your very first time.
It's like a dream tour. Yeah, for sure.
What are some of the first thoughts? What are some of the things that come to mind when you think about acclimating to tour life? Or maybe even for those of us who have toured before, Tari, how many times have you been on tour?
Four
times?
I think so.
What are some of the big things that you've learned that you've taken on the road with you as you venture off?
I drive the tour. Again? I have
Tell us what that means.
So I have a car. And I bought a car while I was on the road so that I could drive the car, so that everything that I travel with me does not have to be, you know, in two suitcases, a trunk, and a carry-on. You know, so I can travel a, you know, big backdrop. I can travel this thing that someone gave me, which is a bust of John F. Kennedy. And now I own this. And so I have to travel it, you know. I travel with my own candles, my spices, my pots, my pans, all my clothes, like that kind of thing, because the comfort of the comforts of whatever my life is at the moment, that's what I need, so that I can feel like I'm not just living out of a suitcase and, you know, going from city to city. That's what I need at this stage of my life. Some people are different. Some people don't need to cook every day. I need to cook every day. That's just something I do. And when we were in quarantine, I started making a cooking show because I was bored, you know, so like that kind of thing. I need my stuff.
Yeah, well, for a lot of people listening, generally speaking, you travel with the company, they arrange your flights, and they put you on your flight on what they would call maybe a golden day or a travel day. Mm-hmm. And you've got two suitcases, and if you're lucky, in your contract a trunk that you can that you take with you, but you
yeah, kind of that. Like that gives you a lot of steamer freedom. Trunk, guys. If you're thinking of like a trunk that you would have that's got like two locks on it and it can be like, you know, 200 pounds or whatever like that. And you put all of your heavier items, your winter clothes, if it's summertime. And so it's kind of like your closet, if you will. But otherwise you have to be on a plane and you know, your stuff has to be 50 pounds or less. And it gets kind of hard when you add in all the things that you need. And so for me, it's important. And also having a car on the road gives you a lot more freedom and where you can live, you know, because most of the time there's a company housing option where it's close to the hotel. There's usually two. One has a kitchen, one doesn't have a kitchen. If you're in a tour that the sit down is longer than 3 weeks, then you must have a kitchen option if you're on a production contract. But other times it's just a hotel and you're just in a room. So if you have bacon for breakfast, you smell like bacon all day. So, I mean,
and then you've got to figure out.
Yeah, you have to figure out.
You got to figure out how to get around town. And if you want to experience the town, you've got to figure that out. And you've got a car, you can zip around. Mm-hmm. What have you learned through touring, Adam?
Well, interestingly enough, so this is my third tour. And it's sort of the opposite of Torreya. Like, I've taken as little stuff as I can. I realized that, like, you know what? I wear the same jeans to and from the theater every day anyway. I wear the same five t-shirts every, you know what I mean? Like, and mm-hmm. So I realized that, like, I don't need all my stuff. I can have one hoodie instead of three, you know, like, but I certainly understand wanting all your stuff as well. I get that too, you know, and also I love to cook and I miss it. And I, you know, whenever I have the opportunity, I do when we have kitchens, you know, and it's hard, you know, we just came from a place. So we were in Atlanta and we had rooms with big full kitchens and it was great. And it was awesome. And now I'm in a hotel room with a small refrigerator and that's it. And not even a microwave. Like, you know, and it's like, you have to figure out how to adjust, you know, from week to week, because now we're on 1 weekers, you know? And you have to figure out, yeah, how to adjust from week to week. And so that's been a challenge. But I finally figured out what works for me, you know, and sort of like how to function, how to get around. And you know, I think if I ever did it again, I would do it maybe more like Torreya does it with a car and have more stuff and be able to sort of like stay in Airbnbs if, you know, like, and I might do that as well. You know, it really depends.
It also depends on how, like what you're saying, like if you're in a 1 weeker, it's kind of annoying, you know, because Ben was speaking earlier about a golden day versus a travel day. So a golden day is a day where there's no travel or rehearsal. So it's your free whole entire day. But if you're on a tour where you go from 1 week to 1 week, you rarely have a golden day because the day that is your day off, Monday, is the day that you're traveling. So sometimes the luxury of staying in a hotel is you don't have to worry about anything in those, you know, short visits. Somebody else is taking care of it. You don't have to worry about, you know, your laundry or washing your sheets or whatever, because somebody else is going to take care of that.
Right.
Sure. So Courtney, with all of that, what have you learned? What did you have to learn real quick about being on the road? And you've got some pretty nice sit downs, obviously. With
Well, I
have to say,
our first city was Chicago, which is where I'm
very surprised to hear that you don't have your own dresser that travels with you.
Going from my apartment to the, you know, go to tech and then home. It was great. And then, we were 2.5 months in LA. Here, we're here for 2.5 months too. So I think for me, I was like, I was calling all of my friends that have toured before. And I was like, what do I do? What do I need to know? And what keeps me sane is the packing cubes, because I'm a very like organized person. I need to know where all of my stuff is at all times.
Right.
So I like meticulously organized all of my stuff. So when I take my packing cubes out, I just put them in the drawers. And then because I just hate packing so much, and packing and like it, like unloading and packing, I just want to make that as simple as possible. But I think the biggest challenge for me is with this track in particular is going to new cities and getting new dressers. That has been what I never anticipated on understanding is that like there's that really big learning curve in that first sort of week when you go to the new city. And then I get so used to my dressers and then I'm like, oh, and then I'm kind of like heartbroken when I leave them. And then, and this track is so, you know, when she's not on stage, she's changing and there's like, it's so many series of quick changes. And so it's like, oh my gosh, it's all meticulously choreographed.
I'm surprised too.
Right? Because it's crazy. It's like, yeah, it's a really hard track to learn. But we do have supervisors that then sort of they supervise within the first week, and so it hasn't been crazy. It's just like, oh, I have to like sort of retrain my mind and go like, listen, they don't know it well yet. So just like,
sure.
It's like, it becomes you training them on how you like to do things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when I was on Sister Act, we didn't travel with a dresser initially, and I missed one cue. And Jerry Zaks, who directed it, was in the back of the house during tech. And he was like, that's it. She's getting a dresser. And this was like a seated tour where they were paying everybody $2.50, you know? $2. So, but we got a dresser because there were so many quick changes for the Dolores. And it's crazy.
Well, and that's outside of the dresser situation. That's huge, first of all, but there's all new backstage choreography. The audience who's sitting out front enjoying the tunes and the story and the performances isn't aware of the big show that's happening backstage, which when you're on the road changes all the time. So you have to learn to go around somebody, and maybe this person's over there and this flight of stairs.
Maybe the stage doesn't fit. The backstage stuff that you used to, like you normally have doesn't fit backstage because there's no room. So yeah, there's a cross over or cross under.
Yeah, which can be, that's terrifying, quite frankly, to do a show you've been doing forever and have to figure that out. What are kind of the biggest broad strokes differences in performing a show 8 times a week on Broadway versus on the road, given all the things that we've kind of already said? In regards to stamina, are the extra precautions you need to take in your performance? Does your performance change at all based on where you are, or have, let's say you've gone to Denver and you have to play in the Mile High City and they've got oxygen tanks in the wing.
They do.
How does it change? How do you have to adapt your performance based on the fact that you're somewhere new all the time?
Well, being in Hamilton, which is I'm using air quotes, y'all, political show sometimes, when you go to different cities and they are not the cities that are your people, sometimes you get audience members who, okay, so when we're on tour, right? So like, say you're somewhere for 3 weeks, right? The first week is always subscribers, meaning they're people who have subscriptions to the theater and they will see everything that comes through, no matter if they want to see it or not. So sometimes you get people who are sitting in the audience the first week, they're not clapping, they're not laughing, they're not enjoying themselves because they didn't choose to come and see Hamilton. It just came with the packet. So sometimes the first week in a city is a little harder because you have subscribers who are generally older, and maybe this music and this content is a little too fast for them, or a little too current or urban for them. So we get sometimes audiences that are not all the time with us.
Yeah. Have you found that to be true, either of you, Adam or Courtney?
I haven't been in a show necessarily that has had any elements of sort of things that might be, I can't think of another word, but divisive in that way. It's not divisive. It's not what I mean. But like, you know, things that would sort of, you know, like, I certainly am well acquainted with the differences in enthusiasm levels and things like that of different audiences in different cities. Sure, you know, and obviously some are better than others. And then there are the ones that you think are going to be really bad and they end up being actually really great. Those are always like, you know, great surprises, you know? But for me, like, you know, a big difference between doing stuff on Broadway and doing it on the road is, and it's one of the reasons why I actually like the road, is I enjoy the different cities. It keeps a little electricity there when, you know, look, I did Aida before I left and came back. I was there for 3 years, you know what I mean? And so like 3 years of like doing a Broadway show and going to work, and it becomes like a 9-to-5 thing where like it's hard to, you know, like get that sort of creative energy up. I mean, you do it, we all do it because we're pros and we know how to do it even when we don't want to do it. But you know, there's something about that different city each week that just sort of puts an element of excitement that just keeps it a little bit current, even after doing it for a long period of time.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, I'd never toured before, like officially, but when I was in Aladdin, I asked if I could do, I switched with Izzy McCalla. She made her Broadway debut and I did, we were at the Pantages. I really wanted to play LA. So I did technically do 5 weeks on the national tour. And one thing that I realized is same as you, Adam, that I did the show for like 4 years. So when we first opened the show, the audiences were so alive and so like in it, and they would react to everything. And then as the years went by, they were kind of like, okay, anyway. And so I got used to that. You sort of acclimate to that. And then when I was in LA doing Aladdin, it was like, oh my gosh, the audiences felt like when we opened. And I think with Moulin Rouge, all of the audiences are so alive. Like we got invited to see the show on Broadway many times before we left the tour when we were rehearsing. And I noticed, I was like, gosh, the audiences aren't laughing at these moments. I don't understand. And, you know, it's just because it's been on Broadway for a while. So these new cities, it's like, that's, to me, I think some of the major differences, especially with like a First National, most of these people have never seen Moulin Rouge. They don't get a chance to see it on Broadway, obviously. So they're so excited. They listen to the album. They're so just jazzed about it. So the audiences are just so alive, like you were saying, Adam. But I think one of the main differences for me is acclimating to the allergens in different cities. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
totally.
Dang. I'm like,
different theaters.
Yeah, I'm like really sneaky here.
You have to get the local honey. Are you getting the local honey, Courtney?
What are the tricks?
So every city you go to, so you get the local honey of wherever you are, and then that'll help you with your allergies and acclimating to what is going on, like the pollen and stuff like that. So you go to like sometimes they have local honey in like the Whole Foods, or you can go to like a fair or like a farmer's market.
Oh my gosh, any
get
other
get your
tips?
Local honey, girl.
This is a pro hack.
Local honey, I'm like, what do I do? Even from LA to San Francisco, I'm like, oh my gosh, the pollen count here is crazy.
You know what though? It's not just the outdoors, it's the indoors. You know, we're all staying in hotels and even whether you're in a hotel or an Airbnb or whatever it is. And I hate to say this, but like if there's a carpet, if there's a rug, if there's dust mites in there, you know what I mean? Like there's dust mites everywhere. They just exist everywhere.
And old theaters.
Moldy stuff. And it doesn't have to be like dangerous, life-threatening black mold, but there's other kinds of mold that just like, you know, are always there. They affect your allergens. So it's all of that. Yeah.
And it doesn't really affect other people who aren't singing eight times a week. You know what I mean? Sure. Like it affects us. Like the slightest little thing, I'm like, what is that?
What, on your journeys, what have been some of your favorite places to play and why? And what are some places where you found some challenges or, I know that in some shows, Taria mentioned this a little bit earlier, sometimes, and I did bus and truck tours when I was very, very young, and we would have to do a different version of the set depending on what theater we were in. We're like doing Tommy, and they're like, okay, this is a one pinball machine show. So we're like, all right, so the rest of you just jazz hands at each other.
Hang out.
You know, whatever you got to do. But what have your favorite places to play been?
You go first, Adam.
I'm not British.
Well, you know, what makes a good city for me is not necessarily what makes it good for other people. Like one of the main things for me is I don't care what the theater looks like out for the audience and what their proscenium and their ceiling looks like. I need it to be comfortable backstage. Like that to me, like, you know, like when people walk into the Fox in St. Louis and they're like, oh my God, the Fox sucks. It has the worst backstage. It's like an old high school locker room and the sinks,
and that
like
elevator.
You have to press each one down and that kind of stuff is what makes a theater for me. Like I like a nice new theater with a sink that works and gets hot and I can wash my face, you know what I mean? It has Wi-Fi that works and you know, like those are the things sort of like, and also good food and able to find good places to eat in various cities. Like those are the things for me that I look for that make a good city, you know, because I'm not, again, A, I'm old, and B, I've already ventured out into a lot of these cities already. It's my third tour. So I'm not looking to go like explore and see the towns and see this. I'm looking to hang around and live my life and go to work every night, you know? And like, so I just need like creature comforts. And so those are the things that I look for, you know?
I'm happy that you brought up the Fox because I wanted to talk about the Fox at some point because you've got a Fox in Atlanta, you've got a Fox in St. Louis, and there's
Atlanta was great. We were just at the Fox in Atlanta. That one's good, but the St. Louis one is awful.
There are these huge 5,000 seat theaters that are like taking you on to Arabian Nights, like there's clouds.
Well,
on the
yeah, because
and it's
around.
Beautiful.
The Fox in St. Louis has lights that shoot out like the stars, you know, in the ceiling.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to describe it for the people. So there's some artwork that happens on top of the ceiling and like shooting stars, like lights happen during the show. Completely distracting. I missed many cues because I'm focusing when I was in Lion King, I was focusing on that. But it's beautiful to look at, but maybe not during the show, y'all. Just PSA. But I think that certain things are different for me. Like I first started touring in 2001 with Aida, and or yeah, around there. And what was important to me then wasn't as important to me now. Like now, like Adam was saying, I like the comforts of like a good restaurant. Whereas before, I like, you know, where's there a club? Like I haven't been in a club since, you know, whatever. But that was important to me then. And San Antonio has been one of my favorite cities because of the water, the river walk. It's so beautiful there. And the people are so nice. And surprisingly, Des Moines, Iowa, the people in Des Moines love the theater so much. And randomly, it's where the tickets are the lowest price. So we get people from so many different places coming to fly in because it's cheaper, especially because the Hamilton ticket is so expensive. So it's always like those little random facts. When I was in Appleton, Wisconsin, many years ago in 2007, I was super bored because there was not much to do in Appleton, Wisconsin. And funny story, I woke up and it was my birthday in Appleton, Wisconsin. And I was like, there's nothing to do. So I went and I bought a convertible. And that is when I first started driving the tour.
And you know what? And that's part of the reason actors will choose to go on tour for those, for our listeners, is with a per diem attached to your salary, oftentimes this can be a financially sweet deal, as opposed to paying your rent in New York City every month and
living in a shoebox. Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, that's, I have to just say real quick, that's, you know, part of the reason why I really pursued this job in this show, because I was going through a situation in my life where like I needed not only a job, but I needed a place to live. And I was, and so this was like, I should go on tour. And so this was early on in the lockdown. And I reached out to Telsey and I reached out to Jerry Mitchell. And I was like, I want this job, please put me, you know, like I really put myself out there. It's like, please hire me. And, you know, so luckily enough, they did, because it worked out. So.
Wow.
Yeah. Is there a thrill and a bonus to playing where you get so many opening nights and you arrive in a city and there's the billboards and there's the posters and you see your faces everywhere when you're driving on the highway? Is that so exciting everywhere you go? Is it extra pressure because then you've got to do press everywhere you go and you've got to add all these things to your schedule? Got to be fun being in LA with the Moulin Rouge and I'm seeing all of the everywhere you drive it's your face, frankly. Oh,
it was they just started putting our campaign photos up because we didn't have, I mean, we had Matt Murphy photos, but they were using kind of like a lot of Broadway images. But in San Francisco here, like I finally saw my face on a bus. It was really cool. We were like, wait, oh my gosh, that's me. And then they put some big, you know, pictures of us up outside the theater. But when we first got here, actually it was Aaron and Karen. And we were like, oh, okay, cute, whatever. And then all of a sudden, like a week in, then they just like put our faces up. It was like so weird. But the first time I ever experienced was that was when I was in Aladdin in LA. They had this giant, massive, you know, the Pantages, like on the corner of Hollywood and Vine. No, Argyle and Hollywood. That's where they put like the biggest image. And that was like a picture of me. And I was like, this is so weird. Cause I'm not on this tour, but I'm only on the tour for like 5 weeks. It was really weird. But that was the first time I'd ever seen my face like blown up like that huge. But yeah, it's pretty surreal, I feel like.
How have your interactions with fans varied, with stage dooring, for example, on tour being kind of a different thing if it is happening? I know it's changed a lot in New York and I think it's back. What is the interaction with your fans and fans of the show out there? Do you find that you get a tribe of people who come to the show over and over again in certain cities, like you would in New York, say?
We do have a lot of Hamill fans, but we unfortunately aren't allowed to do we aren't allowed to do stage dooring anymore. We're not allowed to take any pictures or do autographs because of COVID. But it's always nice to see the little kids that dress up like the characters from the show. They're so cute. So that always warms my heart when I see them like walking to the theater with their little like Skylar sister dresses on. But I wish that we could have that stage door experience again. And hopefully when the world really opens back up again, we'll be able to.
Yeah, that's got to be so tricky too. I hadn't even thought about that. What the challenges of doing this in a COVID era?
Yeah,
while traveling.
Quite frankly, that's been and I'm sure the ladies would agree that's been the biggest challenge of being out on the road during all this time is COVID. And I as I'm sure you both have had happen in your shows, like you know. You get an outbreak and all of a sudden, like you talked before about having to do adjusted shows and mm-hmm. split tracks and cut tracks and all this kind of stuff. You know, we've done shows, as I'm sure you guys have too, like gone down to like the barest minimum you could do with just getting by with as many, you know what I mean? Like, and the, our incredible swings doing 10 different things in the same show, you know? And so that's definitely been the biggest challenge. And again, it has affected the stage dooring exactly in that way. It's starting to come back for us a little bit. We don't have like a very strict sort of like no interactions. It's, you know, up until recently, I've just, you know, from afar and kept the mask on the whole thing. But it's you know, now we're starting to do it more. We don't get a lot of people. You know, at the stage door, you know, we're not obviously a Hamilton, so we don't have like throngs of pre-existing fans that are coming to the show, you know. So you know, it's slow and it's nice, and I actually kind of like it just to say hello to a few people every night, and then you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
What about you, Courtney? What are the protocols there?
Honestly, truly, incredibly challenging because we do get in a lot of cities we get, especially in LA, we got sort of like swarms of people at the stage door, and they would have, you know, like the security people saying, sorry, they're not doing stage door. But then it would be a mix up because then there would be people who come to see you. And then they would be like, well, but they can see. So then everyone would congregate and there were no barricades. So then it was like, then you would come out and the stage door people would still come. And then I can't be like, no pictures, please. Like, I can't do that. So I'm like, yes, of course. But then it just becomes really overwhelming because then you're sort of like surrounded. It's really, I think we just finally did get the barricades up now because it's just easier that way. But it's tough because we're not supposed to do it. So it's been a
But I know that, and then you know the feeling of like being someone who went to a Broadway show and like that's the best part of it for you as a theater kid. You want to get your playbill signed so you can put it on your wall. And I know that feeling, and I know that is life, not life-changing for someone, or it could be, but it's really important for someone. And I don't want to, so I always don't tell nobody. I always just say, come around the corner. Like, you know, meet people around the corner and sign or take a picture or something like that, because I know what it's like to maybe have to save a lot of money to come and see a show, to take off work, to beg your parents to let you come and see this thing that you could watch home on Disney Plus for free, but you want to have this experience. And so I like to try to think of, you know, that and think of like this is like icing on the cake.
Yeah, totally.
On your travels, I have a memory of being very young and traveling in said bus and truck tours. Where there was an occasion where there was a church group that showed up at outside of the theater that we were playing. And I don't know if you've heard of this group. It's the Westboro Baptist Church, and they're big God hates fags kind of movement. And they showed up at the stage door with their pickets and their things and heckled us getting
what show
off
was
the bus. You know, this was this must have been either Tommy or State Fair that I had done. And
what's the problem with State Fair? Like, I mean, come on. It's like,
well, I think the idea being that there were just homos in the show.
Oh sure. It wasn't about the show, it was about you personally.
It was about me personally. It was about me specifically. Have you guys encountered any sort of cultural resistance in that way? I know we talked a little bit about audience reaction, but
no, not those guys. We did have a couple people walk out of the theater when I was doing Aida. Because it was, you know, interracial.
Yeah.
In some of the southern states.
Wow.
I certainly know of that group. And I feel like I have a vague recollection of maybe they did something, maybe at a Rent something, again, for similar, you know, absurdities. But but that's really it. For the most part, no, though, I haven't, you know. They actually, it's funny, like the press people, we had a conversation before we came out on the road with this show, and they were like, listen, some of the press may ask you about the fact that she's like a prostitute and the controversial issues of being, I was like, are you kidding? And so they were like trying to do like, you know, like give me like media training. We haven't had much of that. I think maybe one person very early on mentioned it and I kind of shut it down very quickly, but look, you're always going to find some people somewhere who have a problem with anything and everything, you know? And so like, and as you tour the country, you see more and more of those kinds of people, you know?
Sure.
I have a question. Yes. I have a question for Maria. Both of the other panelists. specifically, you know, I know that for me being in Hamilton, it is one of the most, the fans are super serious about it. And that really started with Rent, in my opinion, of being like the first sort of pop musical. And was that hard, Adam, when you were first starting out to be so recognized and to be the musical that like I loved Rent because I didn't grow up singing musical theater, classical stuff. I grew up like belting in church, and Rent was the first kind of music that I could like sing how I sing and feel good about it. So did you feel like that was a challenge? Because sometimes I feel like it's a challenge being in Hamilton in a show that like is so, like if somebody does something slightly different, you know, people pounce on it. And for you, Courtney, for you being in a musical that was a movie, do you find that people are doing any kind of comparisons that you feel are justified or unfair in that sort of way?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, in that the fans are intense and rabid and they love what they love and they can be, you know, and it can be overwhelming, you know, and so certainly back in the very beginning of Rent, I experienced what it felt like. It's ironic, you know. I grew up wanting to be a rock star. Yes. I grew up. And then I ultimately experienced in a small way what that felt like, but doing musical theater, you know, I relished that because it gave me sort of a taste of what that's like. And then it kind of went away, you know what I mean? And then since then, I've just been like a guy with a career and like, you know, that's not part of my life. But I'm so fortunate in that I saw what that was like and I realized, wow, this is really fun. This is great. What a blessing. I wouldn't want to be like this forever. I wouldn't want that kind of life where like you think about people that are like huge mega stars and they can't leave their house and they can't do this. Like we sort of were like that for a minute, you know, like we had people running around New York City. It was funny and it was fun and we were young. It was exciting. It was all that. But like, you know, that's a whole other level of stuff and pressure. Yes. From the fans to give them what they want and for them to, oh, that's not what I remember. Or that's not what I heard. Or that's different. And that, yeah, absolutely. Sure.
I think to answer your question, Taria, that is the cutest question ever. I think I received a lot more negative comments about Aladdin than I have with this. Well, I think for several reasons. I think with Aladdin, even though it's like, you're comparing me to a cartoon, everybody has an idea of what they think Jasmine is supposed to be. And I had to learn that because I was like younger-ish in my career where I had to learn that like, I'm not gonna make everyone happy. And then I just have to like do my own thing. I learned a lot in the process of that. And I think, so I've approached this in such a different way because they're both movie musicals, I guess, but one is animated and this one. And also since I think Karen Olivo also, the image of her and how different she looked from Nicole Kidman, I think paved the way for me so that people weren't like, well, why don't you look like Nicole Kidman? You know, it was.
Oh, that's.
So much of it has to do with what you look like, which I think is so ridiculous.
Nicole Kidman doesn't look like Nicole Kidman. I just had to put that out.
Pesto. You are on a
straight up CGI.
Savage. But I'm like, I get more comparisons to a cartoon. Like, oh, well, you didn't look like I remember certain reviews came out and they were like, well, she looks more like a Kardashian than Jasmine. And I'm like, I love that you're reviewing, like you New York Times or something is reviewing me the way that I look. How about like, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And times have changed, obviously. But I really flack with Satine, and I'm so grateful for it. And they really embrace the fact that like she's different. And there's like an homage to why did I mind Nicole Kidman? But really, the musical's so different than the movie. So I think that they like accept it, I guess.
Yeah.
Or nobody's like making themselves know that they're haters. I don't know.
It's a pretty easy show to love. I mean, it's got all the bells and whistles and things that you want. Tell me about the dynamic of working within a cast on the road versus on Broadway, where you are stationary. Is there an extra level of bonding that takes place? Does it turn into a high school situation? Because you're trapped with these people in a way that you aren't when you've got your...
You can go home to your...
Right, you go home and feed your dog. Yes, whatever.
It's like I just got a text message saying that, you know, we're going to such and such a bar after the work before these two people's birthdays, and you have to go. You can't say you have to go because you live with these people and you work with.
I don't
people.
Go.
I know, but so you know, this particular cast is young, and I am not.
Yes. Oh my God. I'm the oldest person in my cast.
The first day of when we first started this about 4.5 years ago, a girl came up to me, lovely young lady, and she was like, "Oh my gosh, you could be my mom. Can I call you mom?" Because she found out, you know, how old I was or what. I think she found out like what shows I had been in. And so she was like, "Can I call you mom?" And I'm like, "If you want to do it through broken teeth, But like, I'm the person that everyone needs to call when they get home safely. I'm the person that's like, did you eat? I take on that role because it's like natural to me, but it is a little bit difficult working with younger people, but they're your family. They're the people that you work with and live with and travel with. So there is like a bond that is not forced, but it just naturally happens more so than it would on Broadway. And I personally give a gift. I make Jello shots for the cast every week. And that is the way that I connect with every person, because I hand them out so that people can have a little pick me up before the Sunday night show, a little booze in a cup. And so
there is something to that when you are leading a show, as you all are, of a responsibility that kind of trickles down there as well.
Jeremy Kushner taught me that.
Oh, wow.
He did.
I love that. How about you, Courtney?
Yeah, actually, the biggest difference is that when you're doing a Broadway show, it's like everyone has their own lives and they go home, and people don't really socialize as much as they do on tour. I was totally expecting all of the kids in the tour to be like fresh out of college. I was so grateful that they weren't, because I'm like, I'm old. I need other old people too. But yeah, I think Satine can be a really lonely track, because it's like really, I think my relationship with my co-star is even more heightened. It's like we're in a relationship, like a real relationship. You know, it's so like when there's things that go awry, like we like have to sit and like talk about it as if we were in a real, you know, it's like this whole thing that is a new experience for me. And I think it's like heightened too, because we're on tour. It's like the sort of this first tour together. And, but we have this thing too, kind of like you, Taria, where because my track is kind of lonely, I host in my dressing room what we call Cafe Rouge. Me and our Ziedler and Christian bought an espresso machine, and they went, like the stage managers were like, you can't put that in the hallway, it's a hazard. So I host it, I put it in my dressing room, and we have like a wall of snacks and like a shoe, you know, it's like you put over the door, like one of those shoe holders. So we buy snacks and everybody comes, and so we're doing intermission. It's like I'm getting my wig changed and everyone comes in, and we have like a whole kiki, and it's like, it's really fun. And that's how I get to like really connect with my cast, because otherwise I'm just with, you know, Christian most of the show, and we're like, you know, like, and I finally get to, you know, just like connect with everyone in that way.
I'm totally stealing that Shrek idea.
It's cute, right?
It's great.
Only so much going out you can do when you've got to do showy times a week.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's a very, very different thing. Let me ask you for within your respective shows, what is your favorite moment to perform in your shows? What's the most fun you're having on the stage in this show?
The bows.
Taria?
Because we get to go home. And I'm just kidding.
No, you're
rushing
not.
Dreams.
You're not kidding.
No, I love Satisfied. It's a great number to sing, not just because it's my song, but I think that the structure of Satisfied and Helpless is literally like a play. The two songs together, it's like a very short, small play within a play. And I think that it's so wonderfully written. And I love that I get to sing that.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest sequences in musical theater that's history, so frankly. Yeah. What about you, Adam? What's your favorite part of Pretty Woman?
You know, there's a moment in the show where, and for those of you who remember the film, they go to the opera together. He takes her to the opera. She's wearing the red dress and, you know, the necklace and the whole thing. And so it's to me, it's the most beautiful moment in the show, really, where they go to the opera and they intersperse this song that I'm singing to her with a song from La Traviata, which is the opera that they're actually seeing. And so the two songs sort of intertwine in and out of each other. And you're sort of watching the opera, then you're watching us, and then you're watching the opera, and then they have the, you know, the other actors in the opera, and it's really beautiful and so expertly crafted and well done. And that's always my favorite moment in the show. And it's also that moment sort of that's like time-wise, like you know, after that it's just like it's all downhill from that, smooth sailing. It's easy. It's almost over. There's about 20 minutes left, and like so
the heavy lifting is over. I remember that moment of the show, and it's so delightful to have that kind of classical music break within the, you know, Bryan Adams score. It's really a fun twist. What's your favorite part of being Satine, Courtney?
Oh gosh, well, there's so many favorite parts, but I think I always say Come What May, because it's like really the point where Christian and Satine actually get to love each other. There's like always this back and forth. But I think right now I always get really excited to do the Elephant Love Medley. I think it's just so fun, and I get to goof around a lot with my co-star during that scene. And I think it's like we find new things, and we're just like laughing and goofing around, and not like, I mean, like professionally, you know, like in the roles we are, you
naturally,
know, and then,
naturally.
And then shit sort of hits the fan, and everything becomes like really sad and like, ugh, you know. And so I think that's the kind of like the joy that sets up for the sadness later. And I think. Yeah, I always enjoyed the more like joyous moments in the show.
Yeah, where is everybody heading next? What are you looking forward to on the road? What stops? Of course, everyone's like, I need to look at a piece of paper.
I can tell you.
Let's go to the graph.
We had a really rough winter in the sense that, like, of course, COVID ravaged everybody, but like we were in every freezing cold blizzard hit city, like one after another. Like we had a really rough winter. So quite frankly, I'm looking forward to in this second year of spending January and February in Texas and Florida. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Where are you staying in which city in Florida?
We're going to like four different cities. We're going to Orlando, Fort Myers, and like a couple other ones. And we've already been to Florida for a couple of weeks. We're going back, which is great. Yeah.
We're in DC right now. We will have been here for 10 weeks, which is a really long sit down for us. And then we go to Baltimore, which is, I can see it from here, for 3 weeks after this. And then we go to Rochester, and then we go to Detroit.
Do you get to Rochester in the wintertime?
We get to Rochester in 6 weeks.
Okay. You'll be all right.
It'll Rochester be brisk.
Brisk. Brisk. We like brisk. What? Where are you off to after San Fran?
It was
Courtney?
So funny because when we were in Chicago, we were like, just so excited about LA and so excited about LA. We were like, well, what are we going to be excited about after LA, you know? But San Francisco has been amazing. We're going back to Costa Mesa. So we're going to be like in the Orange County area, which
I love Costa Mesa.
I do too. I love Costa Mesa. And then we do like Seattle, Portland, Salt Lake, and Vegas. Fun. So like,
oh my God. That's the best.
Yes. So we're
going to have the best winter.
It's going to be a great winter. I'm thrilled because we do a lot of the West Coast. So we haven't, sorry, Adam.
That's okay.
Have you ever been to Portland? No, I haven't. I've never been to Portland. So I'm pumped.
I'm going to send you some stuff because they have these amazing food trucks. And there's this one, it's called Fried Egg. I'm in love. Shout out to them. They're so great. It's like breakfast sandwiches.
Oh, I love
so
a breakfast
good.
Sandwich.
You do. You get to become the go-to person for anybody who's going anywhere. They can call you up and be like, I'm going to Poughkeepsie. Where's the best
donut? I can tell
you
where to go salsa dancing everywhere. I can tell you where to eat your breakfast sandwiches, all the things.
Oh my God.
Shopping.
Oh, and we're going to Fayetteville. We're going to Fayetteville.
Arkansas?
So, and actually, a lot of people have been to Fayetteville.
I mean, we just got here last night, so I can't really tell you, but I had a I had a good meal in a nice restaurant last night. So we'll see what happens.
Adam, I want you to write a note on a wall to Courtney that she can find.
I will.
I think that's something people don't know too.
Sure.
A lot of times backstage, the companies will do these big pieces of art that exist on the walls backstage. And it's kind of fun to go into a theater and you can look and be like, oh, there's the Sweet Charity Tour and that's so-and-so's name. And I know that person. And then you take a picture and send it to them. And
in Denver at the Buell Center, they have that. They put the whole, like, somebody does artwork of your show.
They do them everywhere.
Well, I want to be respectful of your time and you guys have to get off and do your thing. This was so fun. Thank you for sharing with us today. And I wish you continued success. I'm a great big fan of three of you. And please call me every 5 minutes. And everybody who's listening, go out and see the show. See Moulin Rouge, see Hamilton, see Pretty Woman. Go and support
see
all the shows.
See That's it all.
So great about touring all the shows too, is bringing the theater to people who wouldn't have access otherwise. And that's how fabulous is that? That's the name of the game. Yeah. All right. Continue to have fun and we'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben. Bye, ladies.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
My guess is you're never going to go to a Broadway touring production and see it quite the same ever again. You know too much. You're on the inside track. You're in the know. Want to say thank you to our incredible superstars, the one and only Adam Pascal, insanely talented Taria Campbell, and of course, Courtney Reed from the Moulin Rouge. I love you guys. Make sure you get out there and see them on the road this theater season. All right. If you like our show, you've got to rate us, review us, and subscribe to us. Tell your friends all about us. You can follow us on social media. I hope that you do. At The Broadway Cast. Follow me at Ben Does Broadway. If you want to support us further, please do become a member of our Patreon family. And we're going to create extra content that is made just for you. Nobody else gets it. Just our Patreon family. Click the link in the liner notes to get that. Until next time, with much sorrow in my heart, I say adieu. This is your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, saying, have a great show!